B-Pod Studios.
It's Boston's most listened to afternoon radio program.
This isn't funny. This is sports.
Felger.
We are not here to laugh.
En masse on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Buster, so great to see you. Finally, a sigh of relief. Baseball back after 99 days. What was the ultimate factor in finally getting an agreement to ending the lockout?
Gary, the rank and file among the players effectively staged a revolt. Look, when the owners put forth a proposal to the players yesterday, the executive committee of the players rejected it 8-0. But then that same deal was put in front of all the players through the player representatives, and the players, rank and file, voted overwhelmingly to push this deal forward because their feeling was, look, we need to go back to work. There's no particular issue that we should keep this shutdown going.
Open revolt. Buster only on ESPN brings us to the 4 o'clock hour with Gasper of the Boston Globe. And Gasper's brought to you by Premier Basement Waterproofing. Are you ready for the monsoon tomorrow? There's a monsoon tomorrow.
I didn't know.
I guess so.
All day.
The game over for Water Train is ready to roll right through it.
Yeah.
If you're not on board yet and you find water, call our guy, the guru, Mike Albert. To schedule with Crystal, call 844-LIVE-DRY or visit premierbasement.net. And then you know what it's going to be, Maz and Murray?
It's game over for water.
That's what it's going to be. Premier Basement Waterproofing brings you Gasper via Zoom. How you doing, Gasper?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. What's your take on the end of the baseball lockout?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, it was definitely much needed here. And I think that while it's not a perfect deal for the players, considering that they gave away the store, or Tony Clark gave away the store in 2016, and just how bad that deal was, I think that they clawed back some balance in the game, which is not only good for them, I think it's good for the game of baseball. And I feel like things had tipped to such a degree to the side of the teams and the owners that it was really hurting the product and creating really an existential crisis for the game, because you had the Tyler Milligans of the world who are now growing up idolizing the GMs like Chaim Bloom, or back in the day, Billy Beane. Like, these people were becoming bigger stars and bigger names than the actual players, which, while great for the teams and great in terms of suppressing salaries, is not good for trying to grow your product and trying to get people interested in your product. So I think that this CBA, the way that it's constituted, both in terms of the financial terms and the rule changes on the field that needed to happen, that the players had fought against, and that people should, you know, rightfully so, I think, dock the players for fighting those changes. But I think those two things in concert put baseball in a much better position than it was in when they started out with this 99-day lockout before they came to an agreement.
Well, so that was, I was just going to, before you sort of circled around to that, I was going to say, if the players are interested in becoming the show again, and I think you're so right. I mean, so much of the interest of the game is guys following the moves versus the actual players and the play on the field.
Oh, no, you root for GMs now.
Right, it's crazy. It's
it's ridiculous.
Well, so they grow up wanting to go to the Sloan Analytics Conference, not play in the World Series.
It's so true. Then why aren't the players more into the rule changes that are needed to bring back the athleticism in the game? You know, they're sort of fighting against that by fighting these rule changes.
Yeah, I think that they sort of look at it and say, you know, first of all, I think players just in general are going to fight some changes they feel like could affect their performance. I think the pitchers feel like, you know, being rushed through their pitches, and I don't think it's a rush. I'm using their sort of what I think their mindset would be, right? I don't think it's a rush to ask what they're going to implement, but they might feel like, oh, you know, I'm going to get rushed through my pitches. You're not going to factor that in. And when I go to arbitration or I go to free agency, you're going to dock me for not performing. You're not going to say, oh, the pitch clock, you know, force me to throw a pitch I wasn't sure about. And I think they look at it and say, like, the whole, you know, three true outcomes thing, like, that's not us. You know, that's basically the way the game is being managed from the top down, starting in front offices, not giving managers a lot of leeway. You know, I go back and I look at, like, say, you know, Felge, this will resonate with you, you know, like 1982, right? So Brewers, Cardinals, the way those teams were sort of built and the way those Cardinals teams of the 80s were built, you had teams trying to win different ways. Now I feel like every team, regardless of their financial resources, basically tries to play the same brand of baseball.
It's such a great point.
Yeah, I'll tell you, though, I still think that's not the reason. I think the reason is when you say, why aren't the players in favor of changing the rules? They're under the delusion that nothing is wrong. The players still think that they were what they were 25 years ago or 30 years ago. They still think they're that. This is the problem. They're incapable of seeing beyond their own bubble. If the players could see beyond their own bubble, like when J.D. Martinez starts complaining about, well, they don't market us, that's why. That's what you think? No. The reason you're not as popular as you were is because your product stinks and the other leagues have passed you. That's the reason. And the world has changed and you haven't. So, like, when I hear a player say something like that, and they're still hung up on it, well, they're going to market us more. You can only market dog crap so much.
How do you market a walk?
Correct. I mean, you know, you no one's going to buy dog crap no matter how well you market it. So start focusing on the product. The product's not what it was. The fact that, and again, I shouldn't be surprised by it. The players are oblivious to this. They don't get it. It's like the CC Sabathia thing. Bro, have you been watching the effing game that we've been watching? Seriously, they don't get it. They don't get it.
I think it's both. I think it's both, Maz. I think your point is well taken, and it's true. But to hear what Manfred said about being a partner with the players, and I hope he meant it. I mean, I know, look, David Price, the opening day, you know, back in, what was that, 2019, talked to Manfred on the field about the marketing. The players do feel like MLB doesn't do a good job marketing them, and they feel like it's kind of intentional, because if you market people, then what are you saying? You're saying these people are valuable, and if they're valuable, that means you have to pay them. So there are guys like, you know, I heard Joey Votto talk about it. Like, if you've ever seen Ronald Acuna fly around the bases, or Mookie Betts fly around the bases, or you see some of the outfield defense, like, yeah, the game's too slow. I agree with you. Trust me, I'm at the front of the line with that. But there's stuff they could do to market these guys, Juan Soto, that they just don't really do like the other sports. Like, they just don't push them, their athletes, their personalities, their abilities, the same way that the other sports do. And I feel like that was on purpose. And it was a concerted effort. So I think it's not a mutually exclusive thing. Your point is well taken. The players have to do their part and speed it up with the product. But I think MLB really has to start to market the players better. And even if that means they have to pay them more, and basically admit that the players are the show, you know, that video game, MLB the Show. The players are the show. The players are the product. They're not like factory workers producing iPhones. The product is the players. They're one and the same. And I feel like MLB was really slow to come around to that.
Okay, look, and I'll just say quickly, too, that this part of it I do agree with in this sense. The way the game is run now by the executives and the managers alike, as it goes hand in hand with the analytics, it diminishes individual performance. So take the marketing part out of it. When's the last time you saw a guy go 9 innings and strike out 15 people? It just doesn't happen. They don't allow it. The management of the game does not allow it. I want to see some real individual achievement. The only guy who you're going to see for half the game on any given night is the pitcher. That's it. Everybody else comes up once every 3 innings. So now you're going to pull the pitcher out of the game and I get to see him what throw, because the third time through the order, you're afraid he's going to get hit. How do we know if he has great stuff that night unless you let him do it?
Or fortitude.
Right. Build some of that. So, look, I don't like a lot of things about it, but I do think the players are oblivious.
Okay, so we can weigh in on the MLB stuff. Gasper's got thoughts on that. I know he's got thoughts on the week across the NFL and more competition in the AFC. We'll get to that with Chris right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okay, we got breaking news. Massive, massive, massive breaking news. Russell Wilson is headed to the Denver Broncos. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal. If he wants to. Russ has to approve the deal. Seattle needs picks and players. Denver needs a quarterback. In my opinion, huge win for Russell Wilson. I am currently texting his agent, and I will tell you what I hear. This is a big win. Denver doesn't need draft picks. Denver's ready to win a Super Bowl. Denver's got excellent running back, a star tight end, four receivers, a great left tackle, elite corners. They probably have to draft. They're trying to sign Von Miller back, but they have a young safety that's fantastic. George Payton's a very good GM. I think they've drafted exceedingly well. This is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before Brady got there.
As Colin Coward earlier in the week, Broncos or the Buccaneers before Brady. Chris Gasper, do you agree or disagree with that assessment?
I think I certainly understand the parallel. I don't think there's as much offensive talent as the Buccaneers had when Brady showed up there. But I also think sort of on the other side of it that there's a little more stability there in terms of just what's going on. Like, you see how undisciplined the Buccaneers are, even with Brady showing up there. He changed that culture for good, you know, mostly, but there's still the Buccaneers. You know, the Broncos, I think there's just a little bit more discipline there. Either way, however you chop it up, like, that's a huge move for the Broncos. And to me, now they're a legitimate contender.
You can say
and
it, Chris.
And as you know, I don't throw around the word legitimate contender lightly.
The Broncos have an unknown at head coach, not a red-faced doofus like the Bucks do.
So do you worry that the arms race in the AFC is leaving the Patriots behind?
I do. If they don't go out and get some help from Mac Jones, I do worry that they could get left behind a little bit. I mean, when you look at the league and what's going on, you see the arc that Josh Allen is on in your own division, right? You assume, even though I think Mac's better than Lamar Jackson, you know, Baltimore still, if Lamar Jackson's healthy, they're a competitive team. They're competitive with you. You see what Joe Burrow is all about. And then you look in that AFC West, and I'm not the biggest Derek Carr fan, but he had a pretty good year last year. Do you know that this division will be the first division since the AFC West in 2012 to have four presumptive starters who are all Pro Bowlers? Every quarterback in that division we expect to start opening day or opening night has made the Pro Bowl. So, I mean, when you look at it, if you're the Patriots, you have to get Mac Jones some weapons and some help if you're going to keep up, because I don't think you're going to be able to shut those guys down on defense, especially if you're letting J.C. Jackson go for nothing.
And so that's sort of the question. Do you build up your defense to catch up to these teams, or you just try and outscore them and you build up your offense? What would you do?
I mean, I would try and follow the Bengals model. And a lot of people have compared Joe Burrow and Mac Jones. And I think if you're the Patriots, best case scenario is that Mac makes a Joe Burrow-like leap in year two. And I don't know, there's not a lot, like a ton of huge names on that Bengals defense. Obviously, Trey Hendrickson had a monster year. The linebackers are good. But, you know, tell me like the big time names in their secondary. Jesse Bates III got the franchise tag, but he also had a bad year at safety. I mean, you know, who's the corner you look at and you're like, oh my God, you know, this guy's a Jalen Ramsey. So they were able to sort of coach it up. I also think, like, if you have Bill Belichick, isn't that part of your advantage? Isn't that kind of what the partnership with Brady was? Like, okay, you know, Tom, you elevate the offense, I'll elevate the defense. Shouldn't that kind of be the way that it is? So that, if, you know, Bill, being who he is, if he's not calling plays on offense, should be able to elevate the play of the defense, even if he doesn't have all the big names. So if you let Mac, you know, let Mac cook, so to speak, with some real, real weapons that can elevate his game, we should be in good shape.
All right, before I go to the phone, 617-779-0985, give me a couple targets that you would have in mind. What would you do specifically?
You know, I bigger targets. I like Allen Robinson. I don't know if they're going to be willing to pay him at the top of the market. You hear conflicting things on sort of Amari Cooper. I have a hard time imagining him taking on his current contract. But if he were to get released by Dallas and were maybe willing to take something that was sort of a make good incentive laden thing, maybe you can get back out there and get another major contract. I think just talent alone, they would be interested. Jarvis Landry's a guy I would be interested in. You know, he's not a game breaker anymore, but he is a slot guy. But honestly, if you're asking me, like, I think that in free agency, they're going to be interested in more of sort of the second tier guys. I think you're looking at sort of Juju Smith-Schuster, Christian Kirk, Braxton Berrios, Jamison Crowder, Will Fuller, who's a guy who's a game breaker, but has, you know, he can never stay healthy, but he has experience sort of in a variant of your offense with Bill O'Brien in Houston. I think it's more like those guys they're going to go after than say Odell Beckham Jr., Allen Robinson, Amari Cooper, if I'm being honest. You know, I would be interested in those guys, but where they're at from a salary cap standpoint, and the you know, not even the salary cap, as you pointed out, Michael, the real money the Crafts had to spend last year.
Yep.
Are they going to spend real money this year? Like $18 million a year on a wide receiver? Probably not. You're probably looking at second-tier free agents and trades for guys like Robbie Anderson and Jarvis Landry.
You got to build it around the offense. Yeah, nobody can control the game with their defense anymore.
It's hard.
You got to do it with the offense. It's just impossible. So they got to, you know, you got to find a way to empower Jones.
Agreed. 617-779-0985. Pete in the car. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, just some good special teams talk here. one of the things you hit on that frustrates me to no end is Belichick's commitment to core special teams players. And just to give you a quick little synopsis, not including the kicker, the punter, and the long snapper, he commits five of his players every year, Davis, Bethel, Slater, King, and Gunnar Chesky, to just play special teams, which averages, with the kickoff and the kick return essentially eliminated from the game, seven plays per game he commits almost $10 million of his salary cap to on players who have no functional use in any other role.
Pete, it's such a good point. And the kicking game is getting less important by the year because so many kickoffs gets boomed out of the back of the end zone. Feels like, I mean, there was a time in the league you had these, remember the days of the dynamic returners, the X-Man, who was the guy?
Dante Hall, or Devin Hester.
Like, there were guys that were just, you know, game breakers. Is there a single guy, unless they put Tyreek Hill back there on a punt, is there a single guy?
No.
In the league? I mean, Gasper probably knows better. But
Cordell Patterson.
Well, Cordell Patterson, right. I mean, I don't even know if he's still
he's
doing that.
Good
but
on you know, the kickoffs.
But either way, it's like, and yet he still just devotes all that money. A good test case here is Jake Bailey because he hit this performance pool thing. Yeah. He's going to be $4 million bucks, which is like among the highest paid punters in the game. Boy, Chris, will it frustrate me if they have a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract and they say, yeah, well, this allows us to spend on the roster and what they spend it on is the punter. Wouldn't that be so them?
That actually would be so them. That you know, Bill believes in the field position game and it does have some benefit. The field position game, but I do agree with the caller that he puts too much emphasis on it. And I also think if you're going to put that degree of emphasis on special teams, you better have a dynamic returner. And their kickoff return game, you know, except for the 1 year with Cordell Patterson, has been crap for years. I mean, it really has. And I know that play is sort of going away, but still. And Gunnar Olszewski, I know the year before he had, I think, the highest average in the league or one of the highest averages in the league. But just eye test, when you watch him, like, is there any wiggle there? Or does it feel like he just runs into a brick wall?
The second thing.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, he'll
get
you 10 yards, I guess, when it's going right. But, you know, he's not going to rip the game open for you.
Paul and Maine is
There's no wiggle. If they block it really well, he'll get a lot of yards. If they don't, it's going to be down after 2 yards. It's all about how they block it. Like, he's not creating anything on his own.
You've said it. They've spent their face off on special teams, but they have no good returners. So go figure that. That's so them. Paul in Maine. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, guys. So let's be clear. The Nets didn't get after it last night because Simmons was getting booed. I mean, there was plenty of inspirational booing available in the Garden on Sunday when Kyrie puckered up, and it didn't help. Nope, that was a direct message to Harden from Kyrie and Durant. They wanted to embarrass the dude, and it worked. It also showed, though, just how scary this team can be when they decide to lock in. Watch out for these guys.
Yeah, so I thought that Nets-Sixers game last night, interesting. Interesting in terms of what it means for the Celtics, you know, both good and bad. We'll pick that up with Gasper. We'll get his temperature on the Celtics and the landscape there in the Eastern Conference. Right after Big Jim Murray gets you up to.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Gold.
This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Well, maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
All right, Chris Casper joins us here for his 4 o'clock hour. Before we get to his NBA thoughts, there's breaking news in the NFL.
This is breaking sports news.
Solid by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just reading here from Albert Breer on Twitter. Of course, Bert Breer, senior NFL reporter for the MMQB, tweeting that Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson has been cleared of criminal charges in Harris County, Texas.
To me, that's surprising. Grand juries very rarely come back without a, you know, all it is there enough here to go to trial? It's not guilty, not guilty, and it doesn't even need a unanimous, it's just, I think it's like a majority of whoever is impaneled on a grand jury or whatever it is, 9 out of 12 or whatever, something like that. Just, is there enough for this to go to trial to see if he's guilty? So it's almost always, I think.
Well, there was 9 accusations and none were found to be criminal.
Wow. Not found criminal, but not even enough to be sent into a court to be found out if they're criminal. So that is good news for him. And that likely means he's moving. Like, that's a huge hurdle.
Correct. Yeah. And to me, it relates directly to that story that we heard earlier in the week that if Deshaun Watson gets through Friday, there's a trade there for Pittsburgh. That was Sean King, tweeted that.
Yep.
So if this opens the door, then we could have a deal soon with Deshaun Watson on the move, which further complicates the AFC.
You got a thought on that, Casper?
So this is one of the things I mentioned to you guys. I don't know if you saw in the pre-show email that I wanted to get to. There was a report that from Aaron Wilson that there were up to 10 teams monitoring Deshaun Watson's legal situation. And the idea was that there might be some teams in there that you wouldn't necessarily associate with Deshaun Watson that were monitoring the situation to jump in potentially. Would you hope that the Patriots would be one of those teams?
Yes.
Felgi, I know Holly shouted us down over the Russell Wilson trade, but I wonder if he would feel any different about doing something with Deshaun Watson, who's 27 years old.
100%
In a minute, I would.
And this is just putting aside the off-field thing. Okay, we're just going to deal with the football part of it. 100% yes. I would. Absolutely, I would. So, the question is, I don't think they would, because, again, there's a money component there. Like, they've been horned up to get a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract for a long time, and now they have it. And then after 1 year, they're going to trade back into that high-end quarterback market. I'd be surprised, but I would definitely do it. There's definitely going to be competition. There's one team that stood out and stands out to me, and is, the report was Pittsburgh, which would be another team that's bad for you. But another team that would be good for us in terms of fodder would be who, Jimmy?
Vegas.
Miami.
Jimmy?
Tampa.
Oh.
Because if Tampa gets their quarterback, then Brady's free to go somewhere else. This is the game, as Jimmy's been telling us now for weeks. You want Tampa to get a quarterback. Nice try, guys. You want Tampa to get a quarterback.
The response was even better.
Yeah.
You want Tampa to get the quarterback, so now Brady is free to go to Miami, because that's what we really want.
Yeah.
Is Brady to go somewhere. And so that frees this up.
I'll take Deshaun Watson in Miami, too. That'll work for me.
I think he'd be great in Vegas. Again, this was my opening take on how the AFC West has become this big big arms race. The one thing they really need is a quarterback, because Derek Carr's whatever. He goes there. Oh.
He's going to end up in the AFC. Although, maybe it's Seattle.
Well, he already was in the AFC.
Yeah, or Seattle. But here's the thing.
Stay in the AFC, Murray.
I just was going to hit on what you said, Maz. If you're a Patriots fan, and, I think most Patriots fans, I don't know, I'm just guessing based on a lot of the feedback I received during the season, they would not move Mac Jones for Deshaun Watson. So that being the case, if another team jumps on Deshaun Watson, I imagine from the Patriots standpoint, you want him out of the conference. Because when we talk about, and we just talked about earlier in the show, where are the Patriots in the pecking order and all this movement with quarterbacks? Like, we didn't even factor Deshaun Watson in. And if he goes to a halfway decent team in the AFC, that's another team that's better than you at that position and potentially could leapfrog you in terms of what the path is to getting back to a Super Bowl or lifting a Lombardi trophy. So I think if you don't want him here, if you don't want him in Foxborough, you better be praying he lands in Seattle or Tampa or goes to the NFC, because you do not want him going to an AFC team. Let's say he goes to like the Colts,
oh,
you know, or the Steelers. Like, you don't want him going to teams like that.
Oh, 100%. 100%. How did that whole thing go again, Jimmy?
Oh. They should want him, Chris.
Another team that would be good for us in terms of fodder would be who, Jimmy?
Vegas.
Miami.
Jimmy?
Tampa.
Tampa.
Oh.
Bunch of freaking clowns.
Chris, they should obviously want him, but would he want them? He's got the no trade clause, and why would he want to come to this team, considering what he was just dealing with were like former Patriots coaches the last time he played?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, but so this one, you know, call me a Belichick Bobo on this one, but I think there is a respect level there, and Bill's always spoken extremely highly of Deshaun Watson. Remember when he used Deshaun Watson to diss Lamar Jackson? Yeah. It's pretty much like, yeah, like Deshaun Watson's a real quarterback. Like, I wouldn't compare them. I'm paraphrasing. That's basically what he said. So I think there would be an element if Watson wants to win and he has that respect for Belichick, and he does know, like, you know, the situation with Bill O'Brien or whatever, I think was decent there. He knows that some of these things can put you in a position to be able to win. I mean, why not? You know, why not waive it to come here? And if you're Belichick and you look at it, I mean, it's not going to happen, but it's fun to talk about. If you're Belichick and you look at what's happening in the AFC and, you know, what people are sort of saying about your team post-Brady and what's going on here, if you were to cash in the Mac Jones chip and bring back Deshaun Watson, a young franchise quarterback, I mean, Mac Jones, I think this is right. I think Mac Jones turns 24 in September, and I think Deshaun Watson turns 27 in September. So it's not like there's this huge age gap between these two guys.
I'll tell you,
the money's a huge gap.
I think Bill's opinion of Deshaun Watson went up with that last game they played him, if you remember.
Oh, my God, he diced you.
I was just looking up the numbers. 28 of 37, 75%, 344, two touchdowns, no picks.
And that team was trash that year.
Bill dared Deshaun Watson to thread the needle and beat him over and over again, and he did.
He picked you apart.
Yeah, and I think Bill's opinion of the player changed that day.
Well, Chris, as it stands right now, again, I just went through the odds to win the conference championship. And I'm going to list the teams here listed before you get to the Patriots. Buffalo, Kansas City, Denver, the LA Chargers, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Indy, and you're tied with Cleveland. So that's tied for ninth in the conference, 18-1. And I did that in order. Is that too low, or is that right where the
that's
Patriots?
That's too low. That's too low. I mean, tied with Cleveland is too low. I would still put them ahead of the Chargers. And I know the Khalil Mack move, and I'm a big Herbert fan, but the Chargers are like the kings of self-inflicted wounds. And I think the coach is a nice X's and O's coach, but has no feel for how to manage a game. And I think we saw that all year long. He's just going to look at his little, you know, printout and say, we're going for it on fourth down. And he didn't back off that all season long. If he had, they probably would have made the playoffs. Instead of Las Vegas. So I think that's too low.
Okay, big news. Watson's not going to be charged, which means game on. He's moving. He's going to land somewhere. Is it in your face? Is it somewhere, you know, is it somewhere in your way?
Can we hear that again?
Or is it somewhere?
It is greatest.
Is it somewhere that frees up Tom Brady? Either way, it's all good. Long commercial-free segment is next. Another team that would be good for us in terms of fodder would be who, Jimmy?
Vegas.
Miami.
Jimmy?
Tampa.
Tampa.
Oh.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is purely a take that exists in my head.
Getting into your head.
Tell you what's in our head.
With hot sports takes.
And we share it with you.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
When you look at this Celtic roster, top to bottom, first, they've been the best defensive team over the last 2 months. Let's get that out the way. Now Jason Tatum is leading the charge. Then he have his counterpart in Jaylen Brown. Marcus Smart has found his role as being the facilitator. I love the addition of Derek Wright. And then you have a guy that flies under the radar in Grant Williams, a guy that you could go small with, who could guard 1-4, a guy that is one of the best at knocking down corner threes, that he could defend at a high level. And then, oh my God, you have Robert Williams, a top 10 center in the league, a guy that could defend the paint, a guy that could switch 1-5s, a guy that's a lob threat at the basket. So if you're asking me right now, who has the better chance at winning the championship between the Brooklyn Nets, the team that haven't even seen Ben Simmons, the team that is one game below 500, or the team that has been playing the best basketball for the last 2 months? Give me the Boston Celtics right now.
Kendrick Perkins earlier this week on ESPN. Celtics over Nets. Chris Gasper, agree or disagree?
I would agree with that. Yeah, I'm kind of out on the Nets, even though they had that great game last night. I just don't know what they're going to get from Ben Simmons eventually when he's there. And Kyrie's situation is unclear. Clearly, when he's motivated, he can play at a high level. You saw that the incredibly efficient 50-point game against the Hornets and then the way he played last night. But I just overall think there's something with that team. Also, the coaching. Steve Nash, I mean, I just thought Ime Udoka coached circles around him down the stretch of that game on Sunday in terms of, you know, what Ime was doing to try and get the ball out of Kevin Durant's hands or push him to parts of the floor where he couldn't hurt him as much, whereas like Jason Tatum was just going wherever he wanted against the Nets, who weren't really making any sort of defensive adjustments. And they kept letting, you know, guys like Kyrie and Seth Curry get switched on to Tatum where they had no clue and no shot of stopping him.
Okay, so let's do this. I know we've been arguing this for the better part of a week, but let's just do it here.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Give me your Eastern Conference hierarchy. Give me your Chris Gasper Eastern Conference power rankings.
Eastern Conference power rankings? Okay, I think I have to go look at the actual rankings now, but off the top of my head, I would say Milwaukee. I would go Philadelphia, Miami. So those are three, right?
Yes, that's three.
Then at four, it's a tie between the Bulls and the Celtics.
Oh, there's movement.
Please,
movement,
Gasper.
But there's movement. Oh. When we asked him this last week, he had him sixth. So movement. They're now tied for fourth. They've moved past Cleveland.
Well, they were always past Cleveland for me. They moved past Brooklyn.
Okay, they moved past Brooklyn. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay, they moved past Brooklyn because you did have them in sixth. Now they're tied for fourth, meaning you could still say fifth, but tied with the Bulls, you're still stuck on that one.
Yeah, because I like the Bulls, and look, I got to say, Holly had a devastating stat he hit me with in terms of what they've done.
I know what it is.
Yeah, no mask. Go ahead.
Against playoff caliber teams, right? 0-13.
Well, no, against the top three teams in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, they're 0-14.
Okay, yeah,
0-14, which is brutal. But I still think in a series against the Celtics, if they're fully healthy and have home court, I think that that's a difficult series. And if the Bulls have home court, then I would lean towards the Bulls because I think they have more depth if they're fully healthy. And again, I just made this point before,
Chris.
And
you're
I
know on people crack. Are
saying, you hold know on. Hold
you
on
are on Mez. Crack. You're on crack.
Hold on.
No, you're dug in on this one. Look, I'm usually the one that's dug in, so I know you are okay, dug in on this.
Let me just make a point. The point is, how much have we heard and how much of Celtics fans talked about their team's record when their top five players are fully healthy? So why doesn't that apply to another team? It's not like they've had their top five guys all year long. All I heard before was wait till we get healthy. Now that they're playing this well and have won 15 out of 17, look at what we do when we're healthy. So why is it different for another team if another team gets fully healthy? Why can't that team exceed what they've done up until this point?
It's not unreasonable to think that way. But I would say just look at the two teams and look at the front-end talent and who's got the better front-end talent. And it's the Celtics. And look, believe me, I was resistant about this thing too. The whole question all along with the Celtics was whether or not they could play together and reach their ceiling. That has been the question all along. And now they are doing it. And I said at the beginning of this week, and now I sound like Felger. I'm just trying to be consistent here. But I said at the beginning of the week, we're going to find out. Atlanta, Memphis, Brooklyn, and at Charlotte. And Charlotte hasn't played well of late, but nonetheless, they've given the Celtics fits. They won them all. They won them all. Every single one of them. They went 4-0 in that stretch. And I'm not telling you it's over, but they're legit. They're legit.
Yeah, they are. I mean, look, if they came out of the East, would I be surprised? I would not. But I'm not like you guys where I look at it and say they're basically now the favorite, except for Felger won't say that. But he'll say everything but that and tell you Tatum's the MVP. Tatum's the best player in the East. They top end talent wins in the NBA. So they should, you know, you follow that line of reasoning and you say they should be the clear favorite, except for then when you ask him, he says no.
They're one of the favorites. They're a contender.
One of the favorites. Okay.
Well, I mean,
one
of the favorites. I mean, you want me to predict a series 2 months away? But I mean, I will. Fine. They beat the Sixers. They beat Miami. They beat the Bulls. If they play the Bucks and the Bucks have home court, fine. Milwaukee in 7.
Okay.
All right. Is that what you want? I mean, it's stupid to predict a series that's 2 months away, but fine. If that's what you want, that's what you want.
So it's stupid to predict the series, except for when you ask me for the power rankings and you ask me every week to tell who do I think the Celtics would beat in a playoff series. Except for when I ask you, then it's stupid. But you ask me every week for a month running who they're going to beat in the playoff series and who would you favor in this series and if they face this team.
No, I'm not asking
you. When I turn it around, then it's stupid to make a prediction.
I'm not asking you to pick a winner. I'm saying just who's ahead right now? Who do you like better? Who would you favor? I don't ask you to pick a series. I'd pick it and stick it. We're not a big prediction show. I'm not asking you for that. I'm asking for where you put them in the hierarchy. Do you take them seriously with the elite of the Eastern Conference?
Yes, and I do take them seriously. I do. They put themselves in the mix, and I think that's great. And again, you know, we did the same exercise on BST, and what it basically came down to was the only difference at that time between you and me was that I had the Bulls as a team that could beat the Celtics. At that, now you've switched a little bit here because you're saying it's just the Bucks, but we did the
hold on,
you had Miami, Milwaukee, and the 76ers. You all had ahead of the Celtics.
No, I did leave out the Nets because I think the Nets are another team that's better than you. So, so unlike you, I've not ruled out the Nets, but I got the Bucks and the Nets 1-2.
Okay,
and I think if the Celts, I can't predict the series. I'll do it if you want, but if the Celts lose to anyone other, here it is. If the Celts lose to anyone other than Milwaukee or the Nets, it's an underachievement. They've underachieved.
Okay.
I think Philly's trash. I still think Philly's trash. I think Harden's a loser. I think they have more high-end talent than Miami. They should win that series. Miami might be a better team, but
they had more high-end talent than Miami 2 years ago. Danny Ainge came on this very radio station and said that after they lost the series in 6.
Agreed. So they underachieved. That's why we ripped them. They underachieved. They should have won that series. Agreed, 100%. That's why we were so critical. They had more talent than Miami that year, and they lost because of toughness or togetherness or coaching or something like that. Unforgivable. We ripped them. And if they lose again to Miami, I'll criticize them. If they lose to Philly and that loser James Harden, that trash team, I'll rip them. If they lose to Milwaukee and Giannis and that thing, it's their time. I'm not. That's okay. I mean, I don't. If they get swept, then that's a different story. But you know, and the same with the Nets, but the Nets is, you know, I don't know what Nets team is going to be there. If it's the Nets team I saw last night, the Celts will lose because Durant's better, Kyrie's better, and if they lock in and care, then that's a tough out and fine. But I think other than that, the Celts are right there, and they should give give everybody a series.
So I totally agree. They'll give everyone a series. So I feel like I'm easier on the Celtics than you are. There's no shame to me in losing to Miami, the number one seed in the East, and a team that's really deep and got even deeper with Victor Oladipo. To me, there's no shame in losing to the 76ers with Doc Rivers and with James Harden and Joel Embiid, who might be the MVP of the league.
With Doc Rivers?
Like if you lose
what is
MVP
he playing
of
off
the
guard? There's no shame in losing. What has Doc Rivers ever won? I mean, except for this right? I mean, a million years ago.
First of all, Maz is going to jump across the table and choke you, number one. Number two, as Doc says, there's a banner up there in the garden with his name on it.
Since here is
you
what I
meant. You talk about Popovich like that.
Chris, you just, when you put Chicago ahead of the Celtics, now you lost me. That's all.
You're right. God forbid I look at the standings, Maz, where they are actually, what's this? Oh, ahead of the Celtics? Oh, yeah, you're right. That's crazy. How could I put a team that's ahead of them in the standings ahead of the Celtics?
Yeah, Chris, good point. Chris, would you have done that like 10 years ago when the Hawks were ahead of the Cavs, you know, or the Heat, rather?
Or the Celtics team was ahead of the Cavs? The Celtics team was the one seed for several years during those Bridgie years. Did you ever say they were the best team?
No, but I mean, I'm just saying it's like you're acting like the Bulls are like a terrible team.
They're
they played
terrible.
600 basketball all year. And I'll tell you this. I don't think the difference in top end talent is as great as you guys think. Like DeMar DeRozan is having an MVP caliber season. And everybody here thinks it's like a fluke that's going to somehow flame out. But then, you know, they're telling me how great Marcus Smart has been for 20 games. And that's obviously going to sustain itself. But God forbid DeMar DeRozan keep playing at this level. I mean, DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, Tatum, Brown, I give the edge to the Celtics, but it's not a blowout.
It's a blowout.
It's not like, I mean, it's pretty close.
It's a blowout. I don't think it's close.
If the Celtics are playing the way they are right now, Jason Tatum's going to take DeMar DeRozan and use him for the hillbilly wipe.
Well, I sort of run out of time here with you guys, but I actually did do some research.
Go ahead, Murray. Have you demonstrated?
Everybody's losing their mind over Tatum, and it's been a tremendous stretch. Do you know this is the third year in a row he's had a stretch like this?
Yes.
Like, this isn't new. This is the third year in a row he's had a stretch like this of 20 games or more where he's just been unbelievable.
Is that true?
So this is
I get
the numbers for you.
Has it translated into winning like it has this year?
I think it did a couple of years ago in 2020.
Nope.
They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Listen, so, Chris.
During the stretch.
Chris, unlike you, unlike most of you listening to me, if that happens, if he falls off and this turns out just to be another stretch that amounts to nothing, I will come on here and say immediately, I was wrong.
I won't.
I took the cheese and I believed in a false narrative, a false flag, and I got duped and I was wrong. And unlike you, I'm willing to do that.
Well, you're just a higher player.
Captain Fairness.
You're back here on Maz and King Solomon.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, Felgi. I appreciate that. It's magnanimous
Thank
of you.
You.
I, but
you.
I really don't want to hear I was wrong. What I want to hear is you tell me I was right. I care more about that.
Either way.
A cold day in hell before that happens, Gasper.
So I'll just save these numbers for Gasper and Murray tomorrow. But I broke down the numbers 3 years in a row, stretches of 20 games or more. It's remarkable how similar the numbers are. And it's basically the same time of year.
I love
it. He goes on tears like this.
Oh.
I love it. I love it. I look forward to hearing those numbers. Gasper and Murray, what time tomorrow?
11 to 2.
All right.
Full show.
Thanks, Chris.
Have a nice weekend,
all right,
Chris.
Good to talk to you guys.
We'll hear you tomorrow on the radio. Hour to go. Your phone's on all this stuff. 90 seconds, no spots, and we're right back.
Oh.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.